Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
This is Abe Thompson with the New Cyber Frontier, coming to you from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. We have the privilege of having as our guest Mr. John Carpenter, who is the COO at PinnacleCart, as one of his many hats. He's also the co-founder of the Global Blockchain Summit. He's a consultant. He's very active in the Denver region with blockchain, and uniquely, and certainly probably very, very handily, he's an attorney. Mr. Carpenter, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to catch up with you.
Indeed. Likewise. So tell us how you kind of went through this very storied and unique history to kind of end up where you are in the technology space, particularly with blockchain having some preeminence in discourse among cybersecurity folks, it's where your interest was kind of generated.
Oh, yeah. So I've been very much involved in the technology industry for a number of years. And around 2016, I really got to learn about blockchain and the promise that it had for digital identity, things around supply chain, things around being able to really do verification, as well as some of the aspects of cryptocurrency. And so then around 2017, launched the first Global Blockchain Summit, brought in a lot of leaders from around the world to come out to the event. And from there, we're now going on to our fifth Global Blockchain Summit coming up at the end of the summer. So really along the path, I've been very involved in the Hyperledger framework, and I currently are working with the training and materials group and adding some additional use cases in there. I've also been very involved with the Government Blockchain Association and some of the work that they've done with governments around implementing blockchain solutions. And then I also run meetups in Denver for blockchain, and that's either around Hyperledger or for the Government Blockchain Association. And then recently, I've been also working with IEEE on an event that we held in at the University of Colorado around transactive energy, which was quite interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And, we had several participants from Colorado Springs come up to that. And then also, I'm now doing another event with the University of Denver coming up on February 19th. And if you go out to Eventbrite, you can register for that. And that's around where the University of Denver is going with their blockchain in education at the higher ed level.
Excellent. Do you see some more solid formation of a substantive curriculum for blockchain as truly the technology takes shape?
I definitely see that. I think that one of the real innovators in the space has been Joe Gersh with Colorado State University. And he kind of did the first initial semester-long curriculum around blockchain, and I did a guest speaking slot for him during that semester. But I do see that University of Colorado and Hunter Albright has done a great job with that program. And then now the University of Denver is definitely getting into training the next generation of students around this important platform.
So what is the pathway look like then? Is it an amalgamation of the sort of the cybersecurity basics and then you build up into blockchain, or is it a discipline in its own right, curriculum wise?
Yeah, I think it's a discipline in its own right. It definitely ties into cybersecurity for sure, because you're bringing trust to parties that don't trust each other. That's really one of the key things for blockchain. But I see it as also tying a lot of times into the database community.
Sure.
So if you look at blockchain itself, traditionally, you know, blockchain is really a well-defined framework, but it's a subset of what's called distributed ledger technology.
Sure.
So if you've heard of the term DLT, blockchain is really a subset of that. And I see it as, you know, being able to do things where, I'll give a good example of Walmart, being able to track and have the IBM Food Trust look at and say, where did a particular mango come from, and be able to give an answer within 2 seconds rather than 6 days and so many hours, so you can actually impact and help food safety as well.
Wow. Let's take a quick break and go hear from our sponsors.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
This is Abe Thompson with the new Cyber Frontier. Our guest is Mr. John Carpenter, who's currently the COO at Pinnacle Cart. And we've been talking about, John, the impact to a multitude of areas with the blockchain technology. And you were talking about how even in sort of the produce and grocery industry, and food safety, blockchain has had a recent impact. Want to continue on impact that?
Yeah, and I'll also say that this group is probably interested in some of the other projects that's going on with the military.
Oh, sure.
And if you're familiar with a protocol that's called SimbaChain, they were just awarded a $9.5 million contract from the U.S. Navy to deploy secure messaging solutions. So, you know, from the cybersecurity standpoint, you know, places like the U.S. Navy really see the value in blockchain as well.
Indeed. Well, and having come from that environment, I understand that, particularly with the use of sort of the SMS-type tools or, you know, chat-type tools and the need to keep those individual transactions secure, I see great ramifications. So I'm actually pretty proud that my old friends at the Navy are going down that road.
Absolutely. And SimbaChain's really done a lot of work with the government, federal government, and it's really an easy protocol to work with. And, you know, for someone who really wants to kind of get in and see how blockchain works, I think it's a very user-friendly protocol just to go in there and test it out.
Sure enough. So still kind of back on the student piece as we kind of build into sort of the professionalization of blockchain. What types of classes are students likely going to see in a traditional or not traditional, but in this new blockchain curriculum? You talked about Hyperledger, some of those things. What else?
Oh, yeah. So I'll say, you know, there's kind of four main protocols that are really out there and have gained traction. So I would say from the public open blockchain perspective, that's Ethereum.
Okay.
And company Consensus has really been driving the adoption and doing a lot of hackathons for students, which is very valuable, just to get them familiar with the platform. And then, of course, you have Hyperledger, which is part of the Linux Foundation. So, of course, that's based on open source. But there's a lot of large IT companies like IBM that have contributed to the open source. And I think that that's really adopted a lot in the enterprise, especially when it comes to what's called permission blockchains.
Okay.
So that's different than Ethereum, where you actually have to say, we're going to invite you as a node to participate in this blockchain. That's a permission blockchain.
Sure.
Other ones that are out there is R3 Corda. And R3 Corda really is trying to dominate the financial sector. Mm-hmm. So they've done a pilot project with different financial industries and even the SWIFT payment processing system. So R3Corda is out there. And then there's other DLTs like Hedera Hashgraph, which are not quite a true blockchain, but they are definitely a protocol that's based on speed. And that's one of the things with blockchain is because you have to write every block and it's not instantaneous, that sometimes, you know, speed is where people are concerned about blockchain as far as the adoption of a protocol.
Sure.
But as the students go through and get exposed to this, you know, they'll be looking at the coding languages that go into these. So if you look at like Ethereum, that's Solidity, or if you look at JavaScript, that'd be another place that these students would look to code in the protocols.
Okay.
But they'd get exposure to the main protocols that are out there.
Excellent. And which would have a wider use. Is there any concern with Hyperledger and its open source orientation about sort of a support chain and sort of, you know, who out there is going to keep the sort of the Rosetta Stone on the progress of that technology in particular because it's open source?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
So let's just back up a little bit to look at the Linux Foundation, which mm-hmm. Hyperledger is a part of that.
Right.
And you're probably familiar with Apache web server and yes. all the different variants that come under Apache. And so as far as the Rosetta Stone and as far as keeping the projects alive, part of the mission of the Hyperledger group is always, are there diversity among the maintainers for a different project? And that's really where it goes from being more of a pilot project to being a production pilot. And truly, I've seen that the technical steering committee cares about making sure that there's enough of a developer base that's maintaining the code,
right,
so that any project that goes live is going to have a, you know, ad infinitum life cycle.
Sure.
That it's always going to be maintained.
Good. And who are some of the types of folks that sit that technical steering committee? Is it a mixture of academia and industry?
Generally, I would say that it's mainly industry that are on the technical steering committee.
Okay.
But they come from a variety of backgrounds. And there are some academics that participate in the Hyperledger protocol, of course,
sure.
But it's really about enterprise-driven blockchain solutions. So, of course, you're going to get a much heavier mix of industry experts
than
you will be in getting academics.
Well, and kind of a bit of a shift in conversation, how have you seen your legal background integrate well with the discipline that you're primarily working in these days?
Yeah, I think legal background is always relevant to analyzing how things evolve over time.
Sure.
And back in the 2017 timeframe when we were dealing with the Global Blockchain Summit, there was a very popular thing that was called the ICO, or the initial coin offering.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time frame, there was always the discussion around the Howey test. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Howey test, but it's basically, is something a security? And when looking at the Howey test, at the time, you know, because this was such brand new ground for the Securities and Exchange Commission, there wasn't a lot of guidance
right.
around that. And so then from the legal perspective, it was a lot of people at law schools and attorneys working for different firms trying to come up and say, you know, is this a security token or is this a utility token?
Sure.
And if it's a security token, then you have to do, of course, in the United States, Securities and Exchange compliance.
Right.
And if it's a utility token, then you have to have either, you know, where state law gets promulgated, or that you have to have what's called a no action letter from the Securities and Exchange Commission.
And where were the precedents? Really yeah, I'm sure all the law school. I was going to say that I'm sure all the law school folks are looking for precedents, and this was such a new area that probably not a lot of that existed.
Oh yeah, there was no, you know, this is fresh ground.
Right.
And usually, you know, the legal side follows the technology side.
Right.
But they were referencing back to the Howey test, which is a 1940s,
right.
you know, common interest case for
yeah.
looking at a 2017 problem.
Oh dear. Well, at least there was something to start with. You mentioned again the blockchain summit. Can you talk a little bit about how that grew from, you know, grassroots to groundswell to as explosive as it's become?
Yeah, the Global Blockchain Summit really kicked off based on my desire to support the community and bring in the thought leadership so that there could be a share of ideas and also really to educate the public.
Right.
And I think that's always been the mission of the Global Blockchain Summit, is to bring in people from around the world, and we've had people from all corners of the world, and then bring out the best of breed projects, and then have networking where people can actually get a chance to talk to the speakers and presenters as well. And a lot of times when you go to these, you know, huge conferences, sometimes you have no ability to speak to the speakers.
Right.
But we wanted to make sure that this was, you know, not so big that people can interface with the speakers and ask them relevant questions about building their business.
And in forming that, I presume it's sort of a panel style, or you set up sort of a Q&A and allow the people that
closer
access.
Yeah, usually what we do is we'll have, you know, keynote speakers to kick off the event and wrap up each day. It's a two-day event. Then we'll have various other speakers. And a lot of times we're doing things around social impact as well. And then we will also have relevant panel discussions. So we had, you know, panel discussions from the state of Colorado and leadership there. We've had panel discussions from the state of Wyoming because they're very active and innovative in the blockchain space.
Sure, yeah.
And then we have other panels where, you know, there's industry leaders, but you really want to have them discuss, you know, what I would say, the current problem or the thing that they're addressing through their shared knowledge.
Sure. Let's take another quick break and go hear from our sponsor.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
This is Abe Thompson coming to you from the SecureSet Studios in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. Our guest is Mr. John Carpenter. So you talked about how you intentionally gave more access to some of the keynote speakers and the professionals at this blockchain summit to really allow the blossoming ideas and sort of the philosophy surrounding the implementation of the technology. What types of deliverables do you often see come out of the summit when you have it?
Oh, yeah. Deliverables, we've seen partnerships form that are announced at the summit.
Great.
So various groups that were doing advertising exchanges with blockchain announce their items. We've had other big companies like VMware make announcements at the blockchain summit and then really get a chance to interface with the thought leaders that really the only time they would ever, you know, connect with these leaders is at the summit.
Sure.
Because, you know, coming in to say, okay, here's the latest innovations from Hyperledger Fabric that IBM is bringing to bear, and here's the roadmap for the next year.
And so how, you know, with all the professionals there and the ones that are conversant on the topic, how then does it take and become sort of a megaphone to the public in terms of educating the public? How does that work occur?
Yeah, so a lot of times that we'll capture relevant speaking topics from the event, and then we'll load them into our channel on YouTube so that people can consume content if they're not able to make it to the summit.
Sure.
And then we also make sure that there's a lot of connections that we make. We make it very easy to, for people to connect and get other people's contact information.
Okay.
So that they can do follow-ups and exchange ideas and exchange, you know, business relationships after the event. And time again, you know, now that I told you we're going on our fifth event,
mm-hmm.
after each event, people come back and say, yeah, I'm really glad I met that person, and now we're doing business together, and here's how that came out.
Excellent. And so, speaking of business, what types of folks are kind of coming out of the woodwork that may not have had the same technical focus that are interested in this technology? I can make some assumptions, but I'd certainly be interested in what you've seen in the actual anecdotal data.
Yeah, I think it's primarily large enterprises that are looking to deploy solutions that are bringing, you know, trust to non-trusted parties.
Right.
Or entrepreneurs that are innovating in the space because they see the value of it. A lot of times it's referred to as Web3.
Sure.
And then being able to, A, get the word out about their project, and then B, you know, potentially finding somebody who's interested in helping to support the project and maybe even working to get them funding
sure.
to better promote the project.
Well, and with these entrepreneurs, what's the best way for maybe a fairly seasoned entrepreneur, but that's kind of making a shift into this technology? How do they get sort of the executive MBA equivalent, the executive blockchain education? What is a good formula for doing that?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time is exposure to the people in the industry and the vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen a lot of times is that one of the easiest on-ramps for people to get their executive MBA in this is to attend a lot of these local meetups.
Yeah.
So people that are starting off might come out to a free meetup event that's hosted in Denver.
Sure.
And then they'll be able to get some, you know, initial content about blockchain. And then also, you know, I'm going to say that they might be one third of the audience is new people.
Wow.
Whereas two thirds of the audience are very conversant in blockchain. So they can, you know, then talk to people who are experts and, you know, get more of the story.
Constantly.
And then as they mm-hmm. move along, then attending the summit, we actually offer continuing education credits.
Great.
For attending the summit because, you know, the value there is, you know, learning about the protocols, learning about the next phase of innovation, and then also selecting the right protocol.
Right.
And for some people, an open blockchain like Ethereum is the perfect solution.
Sure.
For others, where they're looking at doing something in the enterprise where they say, we only have these 64 nodes that we care about, and all those nodes are trusted, then we're going to do a permission blockchain.
Right.
And so it's just identifying which protocol and which platform. And also we do deal with a lot of the consulting groups. You know, we'll have Accenture come out
right.
and present, and talk about, you know, what they can offer to businesses to get them going with a protocol or a platform.
Well, and you yourself are involved in some consulting work with the various groups. I'd noticed looking back in your history, and you probably have opportunity
sure.
to get in and advise folks on which is the best protocol and what's coming next. What are some of the...
Exactly.
And so as you're, you know, going around to your various clients, what are some of the things you see that concern you right now, and then some of the positive stories as you're helping people implement this technology as a consultant?
I think the main thing that concerns me is always just understanding the costs of implementing a blockchain solution.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going with a public blockchain solution like an Ethereum, know that you have to look at what the gas price is going forward for transactions.
Yeah.
And then knowing that, you know, once you spool up a blockchain, it's not free. And then the other thing is really the philosophy behind a blockchain is, you know, it's immutable and it's going on ad infinitum.
Right.
So are they okay with continuing to maintain this blockchain into the vast foreseeable future, knowing that, you know, once they adopt a protocol and start writing stuff to the blockchain, that has to be maintained? So really the challenges around cost and maintenance I see as some of the biggest challenges. And then just setting up the governance around a blockchain is another big challenge for companies too. You know, if you're setting up a permission blockchain, you need to know who is running the data governance for the blockchain, and are they giving the proper permissions at each level for people to see the data that's put on the blockchain, and being able to then say, do we need to add another node? And if so, at what level are we going to add that node?
Well, and that's where some of the cost comes from, I imagine, is, you know, how many nodes do we want to have active? Because there's probably an individual cost associated with each one of those. And then so you help them with sort of their infrastructure and what's ideal for the task that they hope to accomplish with the technology?
Correct.
Excellent.
And a lot of times, even some of these bigger firms like IBM will offer, you know, blockchain more as a, you know, you've heard of software as a service.
Right.
It's more of blockchain as a service.
Sure.
But you can say, okay, yeah, IBM will back up and say, we have this many nodes available to you.
Okay.
And so when you run your blockchain with us, you know it's going to work because we have enough nodes to support it.
And where does the sort of the template for governance come from? You know, since we're still fairly early in the discipline, you know, when you're advising folks on how to set up the governance of their infrastructure with blockchain technology, where is some of that insight, wisdom, even maybe regulation or policy coming from that you can use to help them get started?
Yeah, there's a lot of governance that's published by different blockchains, especially in the permission world. So
sure.
Hyperledger offers a lot of guidance around governance.
Okay.
But then if you look at each individual blockchain has its own special governance issues.
Right.
And so what you would really do is do a data map and say, you know, who are the participants in the blockchain? What are their roles and responsibilities? And then really define it down to what is the visibility that they really need to accomplish their mission in the blockchain, and limit their visibility to only that they need to do to carry on with their role in the blockchain and their business.
Sure. You know, and as I listen to you talk through your experience and your interface in these different hats that you're wearing, I hear great enthusiasm. I would imagine, though, you've probably run into some skeptics regarding the technology itself. What are some of the things you hear from them, and how do you respond?
Yeah. The thing that I've always heard that's from the skeptics is, you know, blockchain is a solution in search of a problem.
Mm.
And usually my answer to that is, blockchain is a wonderful technology that's not right for every application.
Sure.
And so when I address someone who brings that to the table, it's really, okay, well, let's look at your exact application you're looking to, you know, put into the technology stack. And how does that match up to really the strengths of blockchain? Or are you better with just a traditional database?
Indeed.
And go down that path?
Sure. And I know plenty of neophytes and probably less than solidly technical individuals kind of dabble in blockchain because of the cryptocurrency and some of the related components there. Is that a detriment to the advancement of the technology, or do people pretty clearly recognize that that's really sort of not even a cottage industry, but dabblers and hobbyists?
Yeah, so I would say that was definitely a barrier a few years ago.
Okay.
Where, especially in government, they would be more of along the lines of, oh, blockchain, you know, that's all about that Bitcoin.
Right, right.
You don't want to do anything with cryptocurrency. That's just, you know, a problem.
Sure.
Whereas now I feel like the government's come up to speed on the value and benefit of
sure.
blockchain, and you can kind of separate out the cryptocurrency piece.
Right.
As a great use case for blockchain, but it's not the only use case for blockchain.
Not at all comprehensive. Yeah.
It was kind of like it's one of the use cases. It's a subset of blockchain.
Right.
But I think that it also can give exposure, especially to the younger generations, to, you know, how blockchain works, preventing the double spend problem. They
right.
hear about Bitcoin, they hear about Ethereum, want to get involved with it, get their own wallet.
Right.
And, you know, it's good exposure for the industry to have people that are familiar with and say, oh, yeah, I know what blockchain is and I know how it works in this particular instance.
Sure. While we're kind of just on that topic for just a second, I know, again, it's not the end-all, be-all inside the blockchain, but do you foresee any further regulation from government on the sort of the currency mindset with this technology?
Oh, yeah. I think that, you know, the government's going to continue to be tight about letting things get out that are, you know, now the more of the term is security token offering,
right?
Rather than before, it used to be called the ICO,
right.
initial
coin
offering.
Offering, yeah.
And some of the ones that are, you know, Ethereum and Bitcoin have now been defined as, you know, cryptocurrencies. But that, I think a lot of it is because they were so early in the game and they finally had to say, you know, these are things that we're going to accept as cryptocurrency, whereas other things now are going to be security token offerings.
Indeed.
So I would say, you know, just regulation will always be present in the cryptocurrency market. And I think it would be difficult to launch a new cryptocurrency unless it would be something like a government-backed cryptocurrency.
That'll be interesting and quite a shift for sure. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard of John's vast interest, his experience, his knowledge, his exposure, and the various hats that he gets to wear in terms of advising and leading in this part of the industry. John, if people want to kind of reach out and connect with some of your meetup groups and begin that information phase for themselves, so what are a couple of your meetup groups you'd want to kind of mention here?
Yeah, I would point them to two that I think are very relevant. So if they go out and look for Denver Hyperledger,
okay.
There's a meetup group there.
Excellent.
And they should definitely join that. And that really gives them a good overview of, you know, what's the current state of what's going on with that permission blockchain. And then I know that you probably have a number of government listeners.
Oh, indeed.
And or people who do business with government. Let's put it both ways.
Right.
And they would go out to the Colorado Government Blockchain Professionals group.
Great.
And take a look at that group. And usually what I try to do is, you know, work collaboratively with all the different groups I'm involved with. And then, you know, have multiple discussion topics anytime we get together. So there's a lot of good information to get out of it if they show up to me.
Well, John, we thank you for letting us share some of your precious time with all the hats that you wear. It's a delight to get to have this conversation and really continue to expose the larger public to this great technology. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me, and have a wonderful day.
Indeed. This is Abe Thompson from the SecureSet Studios in Colorado Springs. We've had Mr. John Carpenter with us on the new Cyber Frontier. Good day.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.